Welcome to Weekly Insights at Winthrop Capital Management, where we discuss recent developments currently shaping the markets and industries in the global economy. Here's your host, Chief Investment Officer Greg Hahn.
Good morning, everybody. Happy Monday. I'm Greg Hahn, President, Chief Investment Officer for Winthrop Capital Management. And with me in the studio, good morning, Amy.
Good
morning. Adam.
Greg.
Adam Coons, Head of Trading, works on portfolio management. We timed this just right because the leaf blower that was in the background, sounds of summer, just went away. So summer's upon us.
Hot.
Wow. So we're kind of in this lull in the capital markets. So we want to talk a little bit about asset allocation and what we're doing heading into the end of the quarter and getting teed up for the second half. Before we do that, I think it's worth it just to revisit where we're at from a base case economic and capital market outlook. So the belief that we have is the vaccine will be effective in controlling the spread of the coronavirus. The focus when we said that was really domestic, but it's really global. And that the with that spread, and we're at this, we call it the intersection of increasing vaccinations and the decline in the spread of the COVID, the economy is starting to reopen. And we called for midsummer that this we would start to really see an acceleration. And then the second half of the year, we'd see a significant increase in employment to the point where we would be talking about shortages in labor, just because that service sector would be there'd just be so much demand for the workers that help out with concession stands, parking lots, restaurants, hotel, leisure, conferences, and so on. So, and my favorite, the outdoor concert.
Right.
So I think that is playing out as we expected. It's not a straight line, but the markets have moved in ways that I'll admit, Adam, that I did not expect. I expected interest rates would move higher, significantly higher, as inflation picked up and the Fed started to talk about withdrawing its stimulus from the markets. We really haven't seen that, the move. Where's the 10-year right now?
145.
So when we started this conversation, we were closer to 165.
Yeah.
So a 20 basis point decline in treasuries and equities have held up really well.
Yep.
So we still think the Fed is going to talk about withdrawing its stimulus, and I'm in the camp that the market isn't adjusting for higher rates, and higher rates would be a natural outgrowth from that. However, the market appears literally split. Mm-hmm. There are people that are calling for rates. We've already seen the highs and that rates would go lower. And I know David Rosenberg has a piece out that discusses that. So anyway, I think from that standpoint, the outlook for fixed income, if we looked at expected returns, what do you think the outlook for over a 3-year horizon, what does fixed income look like?
Well, I mean, obviously at a 145, if nothing changes, that's going to be a return. To say that rates are going to go meaningful lower, that's really the only way you're going to get any performance. So to me, it's going to be low single digits with a little bit of asymmetry to risk, where your risk is that, you know, you could lose a lot more than you could gain. I mean, we've seen it this year. What the 20-year Treasury index is down 10% year to date.
Yeah. So if we call it, let's call it 1-3%.
Yep.
In terms of fixed income, because we got spread product, we have high yield. High yields yielding,
sure,
what, 3.5%.
Yeah.
And then the context for that is, you know, 20 years ago, that was the yield on our money market fund.
Yeah.
And high yield, we could easily get 8-9% on. Now today, 3.5% is our high yield. That's redundant yield. The so on equities, valuations are, we call it a little bit stretched, but the market, when we look at the S&P 500, NASDAQ, Dow Jones, if we're not at high levels, we're really close to the high levels.
Sure.
So all of that, the stimulus helped, but a lot of companies still in the S&P are still reassembling themselves, and revenue is not back to pre-COVID levels. And then the operational metrics aren't approaching, aren't back to pre-COVID levels. They're approaching it, but they're not back yet. And I'm talking about travel, leisure,
right,
specifically. So the market looks a little bit ahead of itself, but what would you look at for expected returns in domestic fixed income?
Or domestic equity, or
Equity. Sorry,
I think the same thing. It's you're talking, you know, single digits once again, probably higher, 6 to 8% in my mind. But you're spot on. Is that when you look at the revenue numbers, particularly across some of the COVID affected industries, those stocks are back at their all time highs. Yet revenue and operating income are not back to the level. So the market does seem a little bit ahead of itself.
Yeah, and I'm closer. I'm down in the 4 to 6 area, and that obviously depends on stimulus.
Sure.
We'll talk about that in a second. But if you take the old 60-40 model, 60% equities, 40% bonds, your bond return is between 1 and 3. Call your equity return, let's just call it 6%. Investors would expect, you know, something closer to 3.5 to 4%.
Sure.
In your portfolio, when you look at what the returns are on the 60-40 portfolio, we're coming off of records that are not sustainable. So as investors look at repositioning portfolios now over the next 3 years and the levers that they can pull in their asset allocation, and I'm talking 401k, your IRA, your retirement portfolio, excluding, you know, what you can do in private placements, it's going to be challenging at best for investors going forward.
I think it'll be challenging, and then that's going to push people to take risks that they don't even know what they're taking, whether it's meme stocks or Bitcoin. I heard over the weekend that one 401k provider is going to allow 5% allocations to Bitcoin now.
Yeah.
So you're just seeing people.
And I'm seeing more of that. I'm seeing more allocations that have 5% gold, 5% Bitcoin. And the financial institutions are able to, developing technology to able to report on it. I'm not sure that they're safekeeping it yet. So, but it is non-correlated. We have to,
absolutely,
have to admit that. If you're looking to build a diversified portfolio.
Correlated to Musk tweets, right?
With non-correlated assets. So let's talk about asset allocation.
Yeah, so across our models, talk briefly about what we've done, but I think the more important thing is what we're going to do. In our sector models, we've continued to be overweight technology, healthcare, and communication services. Obviously, technology itself has struggled relative to the S&P, but is still up 10% year to date. But with the S&P up 13.5%, it's been a slight laggard. Conversely, communication services has been an outperformer, up 18.5%. And that's largely driven by the fact that, you know, Google has continued to really perform well through all these different cycles, regardless of what's happening in technology. So I think from my standpoint, and we'll kind of talk about this as a team, but is to continue to be overweight tech and communication services. I think a place that we're looking to add is really in the REIT space. And I know we've talked a little bit about that, but
yeah, and from a portfolio manager standpoint, the most important thing in building a portfolio is to have income drive through the portfolio. That's very, very hard to do in a low interest rate environment. But the cash flow from that income allows us to reposition the portfolio without having to sell securities. And the REITs still have part of some of the highest, we'll call it distributions.
Right.
But the highest cash flow, real cash flow into the portfolio that allows us to move the portfolio around. So increasing that would be not only tactical from a portfolio structuring standpoint, but if we're buying in the right commercial mortgage space, I think it could be lucrative.
Right. Totally agree. In our core and tactical series, we continue to hold ticker RSP, which is the equal weight S&P 500 ETF. That's continuing to work. It's up 19.5% year to date versus, like I said, the S&P is up 13.5%. So talking, call it 6% outperformance. And that's really driven by the fact that it's overweight, just what we talked about, the REIT sector, it's overweight energy relative to the S&P 500. And so that's really helped is, I mean, energy's up, what, 40%? Yeah, 46% year to date. So we're going to continue to hold that equal weight, like I said, just to participate in the recovery of the COVID-affected industries. And then on the emerging market international side, we've started to pivot a little bit in our China allocation and look at, because right now we own just the technology piece of China, and to spread that out a little bit. We continue to like China. We think that that's where the growth opportunities are internationally, but just to kind of move away from some of those increasingly regulated industries in China with the technology.
There's a great article in the New York Times this last week that talked about authoritarian governments. Now, we talk about authoritarian capitalism, but it really highlighted the difference between the United States and China and how their form of government aligns with what we're our form of democracy and our form of capitalism. So it really highlighted what we've been talking about. And I think that would be one of the defining issues in global investing, I think, over the next 10 years, is how we compete and work alongside, and our allies compete and work alongside China. Yep. And that's really, I think, Biden's over in Europe right now, but one of the vexing issues is specifically Europe's trade with China, and they're not necessarily aligned with the United States. Nope. They've got more incentive to sell their cars over in China right now, and so for that in return, by their technology, especially 5G. So,
yeah, to that point, over the weekend, some of the G7 meeting came out that part of Biden's build back better program, that's what he's calling it, they're pushing to increase U.S. production of 5G technology. They're putting out what they're calling workshops and pamphlets to try to educate Europe on what we have here in the U.S. And really what it looks like is kind of a U.S. version of the Belt and Road.
So what is that? This is a $250 billion bill that passed through Congress, and I saw the same thing. It looked like our version to support our companies with Belt and Road, but it didn't see the specifics around how it's really going to do that.
And that's kind of where I'm at too. Is that, like I said, the fact that they're highlighting workshops and pamphlets seems a little bit.
This is different than the stimulus, also.
Yes, it is. Yeah, this is just its own thing, but it clearly is a path towards trying to get U.S. 5G production across the globe in front of China.
And it's I know it goes beyond 5G because it deals with semiconductors.
Sure,
The auto industry is a beneficiary of this. And,
yes.
And I think more is going to come out. But this goes back again. How does Western capitalism compete alongside authoritarian capitalism? If this is a subsidy for our companies, then it's no different than what China is doing.
Oh, it's no different. And that's exactly what it is. It's a way to reduce costs, get the production up faster, it is a full subsidy.
And so, China's manufacturing over the last 30 years has developed very, very sophisticated. However, it's still not to where the U.S. is, but I don't think it's far off.
Right.
So their ability then to develop into the export markets, I want to see what they do with this electric car. And so anyway, it's going to be interesting to watch. And I think it's going to be one of those things this year, the second half of the year, we're going to have to learn more about it and how it actually works, especially alongside the initiatives to raise taxes.
Right.
So that was another issue. The global space, I think there was a consensus around a minimum corporate tax of 15% through
correct,
the G7. Yeah. Hasn't addressed the G20. I'd be surprised if it gets through the G20.
Yeah.
But we shall see. All right, back to portfolio models.
Yeah, so just to wrap up here, on the income side, as you were talking about, I think one thing to look at are preferreds. We have an allocation across all of our models to preferreds, which has done really well, up 13.5% on a year-to-date basis, or on a trailing 12-month basis, which is difficult to wrap your head around when you know that the coupon is, you know, 4 to 5%. And over a long period of time, that is really your expected return on preferred. So once again, an asset class that seems a little bit stretched. So I think we're looking at reducing that allocation slightly.
So volatility in the market is down.
Very low, yeah.
And the outlook for volatility near term is declining. It's low again. So we are that's defining the summer doldrums, which has really set us up for October. But I sense some there's just some trepidation in the market, and I don't see the catalysts really for accelerated growth like we did. Obviously, coming out of the COVID, there was clear incentives for acceleration. So I think the structure in the portfolios generally follows a defensive type of overlay.
Yes, it does.
What else do you have in terms of portfolio models that you want to discuss?
I think just like I said, in fixed income in general, we've continued to remain short duration. We don't really hold any long credit or treasury positions. I think we'll continue to do that with the fact that you're really not picking up any yield by extending, and all you're doing is putting interest rate volatility into the portfolio. So, and then on the equity side, like you said, we have the minimum vol allocation. We'll continue to hold that. So I think the theme going through the summer until we see some sort of dislocation will be to stay more defensive.
Yeah, I think too, and we'll close it on this, the cross, we call it this intersection between the coronavirus and the vaccine. In that intersection, is the subsidy, the extended unemployment benefits that states have provided workers, and there are states that are pulling back that subsidy. So the expectation is we'll see more and more people enter the labor force and go back to work, and I think that's going to be a real defining issue for the third quarter particularly, is we'd expect to see a continued improvement in the labor markets and how that translates then into the economy. And then we're seeing the reopening. I mean, Wall Street's big news right now with Goldman Sachs and Bank of America reopening. So people are going back on site. So yep. I think that's going to be a big theme heading into the third quarter also. So that'll help to underscore the economic growth piece of it. What happens with inflation and interest rates? That's where there's some split in terms of what that's going to do. So anyway, with that, anything else on
Nothing
your
here.
Plate?
Nope.
Well, you guys will have a great week, and we'll talk with you through the week. Thank you.
All investments are subject to risk, including the possible loss of the money you invest. The information presented in this podcast is intended for educational purposes only and does not take into consideration your personal circumstances or other factors that may be important in making investment decisions. You may access and download this podcast only for your personal and non-commercial use. You may not use it in any other manner or for any other purpose without Winthrop's written permission. Copyright 2020, Winthrop Capital Management, LLC. All rights reserved.